What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here for another episode, the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Very excited. It has been a while since we've come at you. What better time to get at you than right now with so much going on in the basketball world? We got the NCAA tournament coming up. We're all the way to the Sweet 16. It has been a great tournament so far. We've got the recruiting portal. This is going berserk right now. We're up to like 900 people already. We got some recruiting stuff and all that going on as well. 2021 class still kind of figuring things out, finishing up as they get into the tournament. They're almost at a pause right now to see where rosters stand and all that type of stuff with the one-time transfer rule and everything expected to possibly come into place moving forward as well. Previously on this podcast, it was a whole bunch of interviews and all that type of stuff. If you want to go back to season one, go ahead and check it out. We got interviews with the likes of Kevin Keats. We got Jeff Capel. We got John Shire. We got all kinds of coaches' interviews. Make sure that you go back and check that out, re-listen to it, stuff that all happened during quarantine. But this is going to be more of an analysis type of thing. Going on in my life, we are coming up on the one-year anniversary of the Absolute Basketball Company. Very excited about that. I want to thank all the college coaches who jumped in with me, the hundreds of college coaches who are taking the subscription service and everything with NCAA-compliant subscription service. Trusting me with my player evaluations and all that. Also, too, I want to thank all of the players, all the teams and everything. We had a very successful fall league that ran as well. Want to thank all everybody who has trusted in me as I branched off and went through this endeavor, getting into coming up on the one-year anniversary. Also, too, I'm writing now for the national side on the rivals.com. That was always kind of the dream, getting into this, leaving the corporate world back in 2013. Jumping into the basketball world, it was always kind of the dream to follow the path of being the national recruiting analyst and all that. I'm getting an opportunity here writing with Rivals right now currently, so make sure you go check that out, rivals.com, basketball recruiting, having all kinds of articles coming out daily, roundtables and analysis and player interviews with the recruiting and all that type of stuff as well. So make sure that you go check that out, rivals.com. Also, make sure you check out Absolute Basketball. Absolute Basketball Experience on YouTube. Tons of videos and all that. I think we're up to 2,200 followers now, subscribers to that. You can check me out on Twitter at JamieShaw5 as well, and on Instagram, Jamie_Shaw5. Make sure that you check out all those stuff. Make sure you check out all the stops there. But here we are, episode one, season two, the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Got three topics coming at you today. We're going to talk about the Sweet 16, dive in a little bit to give you some analysis on where things stand, storylines we're looking at, game we're looking at, all that. Going to jump into transfers. 900 people in the portal right now. I'm going to give you five that caught my eye this week moving forward as to where they are, what they are as players, give you a little bit of topic on that, and then also go into possibly where they could be ending up looking forward. And then a couple of guys decommitted here on the national level. We have Bobby Pettiford decommitting from Louisville. We have Lucas Taylor decommitting from Clemson as well. Going to go into in-depth those, give you all what they are as players and all that. Also, finish it up with that. But let's jump right into it. Sweet 16, NCAA tournament time. Looking into it, still think that Gonzaga and Baylor, they were my picks to start the whole thing off. Still think Gonzaga and Baylor are the two teams, the two best teams, look like they're on a collision course to play in the championship game. Let's take a look at Gonzaga. Moving forward, they'll be playing against Creighton. That'll be an interesting matchup, as it should be very fun to watch. A lot of offense. Creighton spreads you out. They shoot the ball. Gonzaga does the same thing. It's just Gonzaga does it with better athletes, better players, better talent. Drew Timmy is a load on the block. He's able to get his down there as well. So in looking at that, you know, you see just the advantages all the way across the floor there for Gonzaga. Should be a fun game. High scoring. You should be able to see a lot of offense played there. Gonzaga should pull away relatively easily. Kudos to Creighton. They've done a great job this year. Kind of they faced some adversity there toward the end of the year. Fell flat on their face against Georgetown. They came into one, two games here in the tournament. So kudos to them for what they've done. Gonzaga, though, in that one. And then they will go on to play the winner of the USC-Oregon game. Now, that's going to be an interesting matchup. They've already played this season. But you look at the two teams. In the Pac-12, who, by the way, four out of five teams that made the tournament going all the way to the Sweet 16, you know, that's got to be a huge storyline. Everybody talking about Big Ten, Big Ten, Big Ten. One out of their nine teams made it to the Sweet 16, with Michigan being the number one seed in their bracket. But four out of five for the Pac-12, people sleeping on the West Coast basketball. But looking at this USC-Oregon game, you look at USC, they're led by the Mobley twins, both Isaiah and Evan. Evan a top five consensus draft pick coming up in this next draft. He's been unbelievable. Isaiah as well. He's shown the ability to rebound and stretch the floor. Those two are mismatches. Those two are dynamic. My question with USC is the guard play. Can the guard play withstand, move forward, continue to play Sweet 16 type of basketball? Then going against Oregon, you have a team doesn't have as many holes. They're big, long, and athletic. What they've done such a great job so far is on the defensive end of the floor, switching looks. Dana Altman's done a great job of kind of switching and morphing what his team is doing on the defensive end. They're long, athletic. They can get out. They have bigs who can move their feet. They have guards that can make shots. And they're led by Chris Duarte, who's one of the more unsung players in the college game right now. One of the more unsung players. Sure, he'll be 24 come draft time. But he's more than one of the more unsung players when it comes toward looking at the NBA draft. Gonzaga, Oregon, I think Oregon is the best team suited before they get to Baylor to play against Gonzaga. Sure, they're only a 7 seed and everything with that, but they are suited to play against Gonzaga. They have the length, they have the athleticism, they have the low post play, they have the shot making, they have the defensive acumen. Just Gonzaga is so deep, and they're led by multiple pros. Whereas Oregon has a first-round draft pick type of talent in Chris Duarte, Gonzaga has lottery talent. Gonzaga has the Jalen Suggs. They have the Corey Kisperts. They have Drew Timmy, who's a great college player in his own right and will probably be on NBA draft boards moving forward as well with the success that he's had down there on the low block. Gonzaga should move forward in this game, but this will be a test for Gonzaga. Those Pacific Northwest type of teams showing similar type of game, similar type of talent and all that should be Gonzaga's biggest test heading into the Baylor game. Now looking at what Baylor has moving forward. Led off the first Villanova. What a story, Jay Wright. I think this has shown Jay Wright's greatness as a coach as to what he has been able to do to get his team here without Colin Gillespie. They won. They went 5-5 over their last 10 games leading into the tournament, and they came in and they won too. I think everybody had them against their back against the wall. Their first round game, everybody had Baylor. Everybody had Winthrop beating them. That was kind of the darling pick of everybody's bracket, and they got it wrong. Not only that, they went on and won their second game as well. But you look at it, Baylor is more equipped. I guess with Gillespie going down, Jay Wright's done a great job of putting the ball a little bit more in Jeremiah Robinson Earl's hands, letting him kind of create, letting him use his mismatch and his ability to go on. I think Baylor's able to better defend that. They have the long, athletic bigs down low. They can stay with that. Baylor should win this game going away, double-digit wins and all that type of stuff. Then looking forward, they get the winner of the Oregon State-Loyola-Chicago game. Now, looking at how Oregon State got here, improbable. They weren't even on the bubble. They go through, win the entire Pac-12 conference, and then they move they come in as a low seed, win their first two round games in the NCAA tournament. Coach Tinkle has done such an unbelievable job with this team, what he's been able to do. They've been able to make shots behind Thompson, the guard, supreme shot maker, supreme confidence, and Tinkle with his ability to change defenses, with his ability to morph and kind of diversify the looks that he's giving the opposing teams and kind of get in their head. Not being able to nail down, hunker down on one specific offense, he's done a great job keeping them on their feet, and they've done a great job of making plays, making shots as well. But Loyola Chicago, Porter Moser, the story, a story of the tournament so far. Sister Jean, she was there for this the Final Four run. She's been here so far. She passed her tests and everything for COVID and all that. And she's been safe to be there and be involved. Well, she's got them on a run again. They played against Illinois. They beat Illinois, knocked Illinois out, who a lot of people had in the final game moving in. That was such an unbelievable matchup nightmare for Illinois. You look at what Porter Moser did. He put Krutwig in the middle of the paint and let him create. Kofi Coburn just did not have the speed. I mean, they just picked on Kofi the entire time. Now Krutwig came out. He made plays. He made shots. He was able to turn and face. If Kofi didn't come out, he was able to hit the floater, the easy jump shot. If he did come out, he was able to pass and distribute, and they moved the ball around and got open looks. Unbelievable job there by Porter Moser. Now, moving ahead, looking at the matchups that they have, I have Loyola Chicago beating this Oregon State team. Good job to Wayne Tinkle. Saved his job. Should probably get an extension moving forward here. I think this is the end of the run for them. Porter Moser gets another one, and then you go against Baylor. I don't think that Loyola of Chicago is going to be able to pick on the Baylor bigs like they were able to do Kofi Coburn. So I think that'll come. The dribble penetration coming from the guards, the Davion Mitchells, the Adam Flaglers of the world, the Jared Butlers and everything. I just feel like the dribble penetration coming from the Baylor guards is going to be too much for the Loyola Chicago team to handle. Also, I believe that the bigs will be able to kind of thwart them being able to run their offense through Krutwig with their length, with their athleticism, with their ability to move their feet, and the depth that they have with the bigs. There's a whole lot of them. There's a stable of big guys there at Baylor. Baylor should move forward past that game. It will be probably pretty close to start off with. Second half, they should continue to pull away, and then move ahead coming out of this weekend. Great stuff. The best story that I saw for me so far in this tournament has been Max Asmus and Kevin O'Banner. Shout out Kevin O'Banner. Mount Zion, Durham, North Carolina. Loved him coming out of high school. And he went on to Oral Roberts, redshirted his first year. Now he's at a redshirt junior. And he's had an unbelievable season so far. So far, in these two games, you have the O'Banner-Asmus duo has 56 points in the first game combined. Nope, it was 59 points together combined in the first game. And then you have 26 and 28 against Florida. They're a two-headed monster. These two guys, you know what they're going to get. You know what they're going to give you. And their coach does such a great job of being able to get them their looks in what they're looking to do. You have Max Asmus, who had 29 in the first game against Ohio State and then 26 followed up with 26 against Florida. You have Kevin O'Banner, 30 in the first game against Ohio State, 28 against Florida. They've shot the ball well. Between the two of them, they've made 16 threes. Asmus has also added 5 assists, 2 steals per game through these two games, and O'Banner has also added 11 rebounds, 2.5 steals per game. That's what's going to be so interesting moving forward in this next game is how do they match up against Arkansas? Now, Arkansas is a big, long team. While most of their team is new, they're veteran guys because Musselman brought in a lot of transfers, guys that have been there before, guys that have played before. They're going to spread you out. They're going to take advantage of matchups. Musselman comes from the NBA tree. He's going to be doing – he runs an NBA-style offense. Again, spread it out, attack individual matchups and everything. It'll be interesting to see how the Oral Roberts team is able to get Asmus and O'Banner looks. Will they still be able to go to them, get them the ball in space, and then have those two guys make plays? Because – if you're Arkansas and you take one of those two guys out of the game, which they did in the first game, these two teams have already played this year. Arkansas won the game relatively easily. They killed them on the boards. The size of them is really what got them. But O'Banner went for 21 and 10 on 7 of 12 from the field in that game. Asmus went for 11, 4, and 3. He was 4 of 11 from the field in that game. So they were able to take Asmus out of that game. Arkansas won going away. They won on the boards and everything there. O'Banner, Justin Smith, that's going to be the matchup to kind of watch with that. The Indiana transfer came down. He's athletic. He's able to move his feet. O'Banner likes to take his man away from the basket, knock down threes, be a pick-and-pop type of threat. Smith should be able to stay with him in doing that. Asmus is the nation's leading scorer this year, 24.6 points per game. He shot 43.6% from three this season. He's been able to carry that into the tournament. We'll see if he's able to do it through Arkansas. My prediction, I have Arkansas winning this game. But what a story Oral Roberts have been up until this point. Moving on, the game that I'm looking for, UCLA versus Alabama. What an exciting – I like offense. I'm an offensive guy. This should be a great offensive showing that both of these two teams have, both in different ways. They both spread the floor, but what they do off of that is different. You have Alabama who spreads the floor. They move the ball. They are fourth in the country in threes per game this year at 30 threes taken per game this year. They're making 11 as a team, shooting about 36% as a team from the three-point line this year, which is fourth nationally both ways. And they're averaging 40.5 rebounds per game. And they're keeping opponents to 26% shooting from three, which is 10th in the country. So you take threes and make threes. You prevent the other team from making threes. And you rebound the basketball. That is why Nate Oates' team has had such a great success this year. That's why they've been able to beat a lot of teams because they take and make threes, they prevent the other team from making threes, and they end possessions by rebounding the basketball. Ball movement and all that type of stuff is the thing there. You look at UCLA, they spread the floor just the same, but they use their playmaking wings to kind of create. So they have Tiger Campbell, the bookends, Tiger Campbell at the point. They have Cody Riley at the big. And then you have the wing trio, Jules Bernard, Jaime Jaquez, and Johnny Juzang. All of them 6'6", all of them can handle shoot and pass, and all of them have had their moments within this tournament. Johnny Juzang, the sophomore, he was a transfer from Kentucky this past year, came back to be closer to home to play this season. He's averaged, he scored 22 in their first game. The 6'6" sophomore has kind of led the way. He's been their guy all season, their leading scorer. Jaime Jaquez has had a huge tournament. He's averaged 11.5 a game. He put up 13 in the first game. He's their second leading scorer. And then you have Jules Bernard, third leading scorer, the 6'6" junior as well. What UCLA does is they spread the floor and they pick on matchups. They let their wings, whoever's got the matchup they desire, go one-on-one and create, and then they crash the boards. Cody Riley does what you want a big to do in that situation and go screen, get rebounds, move the ball. Tiger Campbell does a great job getting the ball across half court and getting the ball to the playmaker's hands, relocating. When his number is called, he's able to finish. UCLA has five guys this year that have finished in double figures. You have Chris Smith that they lost, who's also a double-figure scorer, but they have five guys in this whole starting lineup: Cody Riley, Johnny Juzang, Jaime Jaquez, Jules Bernard, Tiger Campbell. All of them averaged 10-plus points per game this year. They know how to play with one another. This game should be very exciting with the spread offense. There should be a lot of offense in this game. I would have Alabama winning. I really just like the way that they play. I mean, again, I've said it five times already. Taking and making threes, rebounding the basketball, eliminating the other team from making threes. Great way to win basketball games, you know. And if the threes aren't falling, they still rebound, they still defend. So I like them to kind of move on and to be a threat to get all the way to the Final Four in this entire tournament. Now, college basketball, moving on. We'll go to the transfer wire. Again, there are 900 people that have been in the transfer wire, and every single day there are more. I am on transfer wire duty here for Rivals.com. As I started this, there have been already three that have entered this morning. I'm sure that as I refresh when I get done with this podcast, there will be numerous amounts more as I try to catch up and everything. But here are five that have caught my eye this past week of players that should be hot commodities as the process goes. Jared West, four-year starter at Marshall University, 5'11" point guard. He started every game of his college career. He's got 80 career wins. Last season, Jared West averaged 12.5 points, 6 assists, 2.5 steals, and he shot 40.8% from three this past year. He's a two-time Conference USA team player. He's also a two-time Conference USA all-defensive team player. Talked to him a little bit yesterday. He's saying that Louisville, Wichita State, and Pittsburgh are the three schools that are after him the hardest right now. I'm going to have a little bit more in-depth interview with him later on this week, going into next week with Rivals.com, so make sure you check that out. But Jared West, I think he's a consummate point guard. I think what Louisville is an interesting team to pop up here. What they showed this past year with Carlique Jones bringing in the transfer, who's had a lot of success at a lower-level league, and then it translated over. Jared West is a winner. Jared West has winning tendencies. He's able to defend, and he's able to make shots, and he's able to really distribute the basketball, which is something that you want. You know, Louisville's coming back. They're trying to get things back on track here. Wichita State also has had the tough, gritty guards that win basketball games, them losing Al-Tariq Gilbert. So it makes sense as to why Jared West would be on the top of their list. And Pittsburgh, they were gutted this year with transfers as well. They lost Audisi Toney last year. They lost Trey McGowan. This year, Xavier Johnson also, and others as well. So their backcourt needs to have more talent brought into it. Jared West would be a perfect fit there. Again, it'll be interesting to see how things play out with Jared. Jared is the gritty winner, the gritty winning type of point guard that makes everybody on the floor better. Moving over, Kellen Grady, a 2,000-point scorer at Davidson. He is the sixth all-time leading scorer, 2,002 career points. He put his name in the transfer portal because Davidson does not have a graduate school program. Last year, he averaged 17.1 points, 4.6 rebounds, 2.4 assists, shot 38% from three. He's a three-time All-A-10 performer. Kellen Grady will be probably one of the hottest names out there. He's kind of somebody that might have caught a lot of people by surprise. He's already played in college for 4 years, coming back for a fifth. He's had pro type of looks you know, he's been on the draft radar. Now he's come back each year because he hasn't quite been on the cusp to get a guaranteed draft pick, but he's been on the draft radar since his sophomore season. He's a 6'5", 6'6" shooting guard. He can really score the basketball. He's got an innate feel. He came up through the ranks. They listed him as a point guard. He's kind of more of a secondary type of ball handler, but he's shown at Davidson his ability to score the basketball. That's going to go huge. He should have somebody that should have all the blue bloods all over him. Every level of basketball will be there. Coming out of high school, he had 18 to 20 offers. He had them from the likes of Richmond, Rhode Island, Old Dominion, Creighton. All those offers came through as he came through out of Northfield Mount Hermon, the New Jersey Players AAU program. He chose Davidson, so he chose fit. Obviously, 2002 career points through four seasons, he chose fit. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out this offseason. He will get looked at by all of the major programs. We'll see where he ends up going. I don't have any insight on that one as of right now. As things progress, should get some more insight as we go. His name will be a hot one on the wire. James Reese just last night put his name in the portal. North Texas, as we know, he started every single game his last 2 years at North Texas. They just made a tournament run to the round of 32, where James Reese played a vital role within that team, within what they were doing as a team. He's a 6'4", 6'5". He's a graduate transfer. This past year, he averaged 10.9 points, 4.3 rebounds, 1.5 steals. He shot 35% from three. He started off at Buffalo when Nate Oates left. He left, transferred to North Texas these last 2 years. Again, as we said, he started every single game for North Texas. McCaslin's done a great job with him. So he is one who should come back. He is a Columbia, South Carolina native. Again, Buffalo in the Northeast, over to Texas in the Midwest. He should be one who these schools in this region, the mid-plus, the high major schools in this region, should be taking a close look at. Possibly also, too, looking at Earl Grant, whom he has connections with up at Boston College as well. He's a grad transfer. You know what you're going to get from him. He's been through the fire before. He's been a feature guy on very good teams already in the past. So it'll be interesting to see how things – again, he just last night put his name into the portal, so – things are very much in its infancy there. I should be catching up with him later this week as well, and see kind of where things are at with that. Race Thompson, another one who put his name in the portal yesterday. The Tennessee junior, he's a top 150 guy coming out. He's from Minnesota. He played his AAU basketball with D1 Minnesota. His father also attended the University of Minnesota as a football running back. So you kind of have a lot of smoke there. It looks like Minnesota might be in the mix. Brand new coach, Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson was on the Minnesota staff the first time through when they were recruiting Race Thompson there as well. So there's some familiarity with Thompson as a coach. Last year, he really came into his own last year, his first year starting, 27 out of 27 games, 9.1 points, 6.2 rebounds, one steal, 1.2 blocks per game. What you're getting from him, he's a hustle guy. He's a glue guy. He's the guy on the floor that loves doing the dirty work. He's an ultimate defender. He's able to defend multiple positions on the defensive side of the floor at 6'8", about 220 pounds, you know, and he's able to finish. He's able to move well. He's a good cutter off the ball. He's able to put his back to the basket, finish on the block as well. He's able to be the second big in those type of matchups, which is what Coach Johnson is going to need at Minnesota. There's a lot of smoke around that, so we'll see. How things progress with Race Thompson. And another one who entered the portal yesterday was Jamin Brakefield, Duke. That one kind of caught a lot of people, I don't want to say off guard, but it kind of caught a lot of people by surprise, but not really. He's a top 50 player coming out, Rivals 150, number 44. This past season, he had 20-plus offers all over the country. He was a big name. He was the feature player for Huntington Prep, national powerhouse, a high school program, but he's originally from the state of Mississippi. He never quite got his footing. He was kind of a backup tweener between Matthew Hurt, Jalen Johnson for a lot of the year before he left as well. He got a lot of playing time after Johnson left. Still could never kind of quite grab his footing. What you're getting in Brakefield as a player is he's a multi-positional defender on offensive end. He can play kind of the 3, 4, or 5 depending on how you want to play moving forward. He's a supreme athlete, big, strong, lengthy guy, 6'8", 6'9", weighing in about 220. Super straight line athlete. The question mark will be his jump shot. However, his creation ability, his ability to see the floor, his ability to make plays off the bounce as well will be incredibly valuable. Again, he's a Mississippi native. Look for him to possibly go back to the state of Mississippi. There's a lot of smoke around that one as well. Of Brakefield going back to Mississippi, going back to his home state. We'll see when and if that happens also. But those are the five transfers that I took my eye this past week. Jared West, Kellen Grady, James Reese, Race Thompson, Jamin Brakefield. So let's keep an eye on them more. The portal is going to continue to get flooded with players. So hopefully every week we'll be able to bring a new five to you of guys that we're watching and how things will play out. Then also wrapping this session up, two 2021 prospects, both from the state of North Carolina, recently decommitted from Power Five schools. You have Bobby Pettiford, who decommitted from Louisville. He is a Rivals 150 guy in the 2021 class. And you have Lucas Taylor, who decommitted from Clemson. We'll start with Lucas. Luke is a Heritage High School. He's a 1,300-point career guy. This past season, he averaged 27.9 points and 8 rebounds per game. He shot 51% from the floor. He was tasked to do a lot for his high school team this past season. He's a 6'5" shooting guard. Moving forward, the kind of thing that he's going to have to work on is his jump shot. His release point's a little bit low right now, kind of negating his 6'5" frame. But he's a great athlete. He's got great length and everything. And as he retools that jump shot, he will continue because he is a shot maker. He is a shot maker. He does have the ability to score the basketball. He has the mentality to score the basketball and to do that at the highest level as well. He just decommitted two nights ago. It was a little bit unexpected, I guess. Tons of college coaches have called me about him. So I'm going to touch base again with him later this week and see. I've already texted back and forth with him the night that he did it. I'm going to touch base with him later this week as well to kind of see where things are at, what schools are progressing. He is 100% wide open when he did it. He didn't have anybody in mind coming through. I know Marquette was involved. I know Providence was involved and a lot of others. He was one of the huge blow-ups throughout the quarantine session. I think he ended up with 32-plus offers at the time he committed to Clemson. So his should be an interesting one coming back. The timing of the decommitment is a little bit awkward because he has no more games left. He's not going to play AAU anymore or anything like that. So, relying on film that he had this past season, 27.8 points and 8 rebounds per game, there should be some pretty good film there to watch. And the second player, Bobby Pettiford, he 1,944 career points at South Granville High School. This past season, he averaged 19.8 points, 6.4 assists, 2.3 steals, and here's a key note here. He shot 39% from three this past season as well. That was kind of always the question mark with him. You know, a 5'11" explosive point guard. He's got a ton of burst. His end-to-end speed is elite. His ability to get from one end of the floor to the other is elite among the best in the country. And that's kind of what puts him in that top 150 range in the 113 Rivals 150 ranking that he has there is his elite end-to-end speed. And then this past year, his game continued to evolve. The jump shot came along this past season, again, 39%, but he's also able to play in the half court. He's able to slow down, play with good pace in the half court as well. Good vision, sees the floor incredibly well too. Last night, he said he got a call from Kansas. He's got a Zoom setup coming with him as well. I know Purdue's going to get involved. There's a ton of schools. We'll see what happens at UNC. Obviously, Duke's got some players that are leaving too. UNC's got some players that are leaving with the question mark in the air of what's going to happen with Caleb Love, what's going to happen with Curran Walton, what's going to happen with these guards that they have already on the team. And then looking at Duke, they've already had Jamin Brakefield leave as well. So, who's going to follow suit? If those two were to enter the picture, I think Bobby Pettiford would look at that. But I also don't think that he's really wanting to try to wait this out a lot. He had a great relationship with Providence moving forward. There's been future cast for Providence for him already in this process. Providence is where the smoke's at, but things could get very interesting. There could be a team to come and play again. Like we said last night, he was very intrigued by that Kansas phone call and then the Zoom call that's subsequently coming as well. So Bobby Pettiford, Lucas Taylor, keep an eye on both of them. That's kind of the scouting report. That's what they are as players. But, guys, thank y'all very much for tuning in. That'll be our Season 2, Episode 1. That's the wrap-up on it. Please make sure that you go, that you subscribe to this podcast, that you go and like this podcast. And we want to hear a review from you, what you think. We want to hear from you topics that you want to hear me cover moving forward, guests that you might want me to have moving forward. And I'll try my best to be able to get them. I'll try my best to be able to answer all the questions that you may have. So leave in the comments below any type of stuff that you want to hear moving forward, what you like. And also, too, I want to hear from you what you agree with and disagree with in this podcast. Please leave the comments below. We want to be interactive here with everything. After you rate, after you subscribe to the podcast that you have on all of your Apple or all of your podcast listening tools, Apple, Anchor, all that stuff as well. Also, make sure that you check out the Absolute Basketball Experience YouTube channel. Please go ahead and subscribe to that channel as well. We have a ton of, there'll be some more vocal things that are coming as well as I do versus, as I do player comparisons, scouting reports, and all that type of stuff with players, but also to a ton of mixtapes of players as well. Make sure you check that out. Absolute Basketball Experience with Jamie Shaw. Make sure that you follow me on Twitter at JamieShaw5. Make sure you follow me on Instagram, Jamie_Shaw5 as well. But until next time, guys, thank you all very much. We'll see you soon.